So this is the West Coast Project podcast for Better Call Saul. And my name is Mike. I'm here with Kelly. Hi, Kelly.
Hi.
We're doing tonight 411 Crawl Space. And Kelly, this is right, almost a continuation directly from the last one where the boys left Salude. They left the cartel house, the Hacienda, after having a shootout and poisoning the big Dons and Capos. So the first storyline we're going to talk about is the cartel, how they abandon that Capo house and get to the warehouse that's a medical center that Gus had prearranged. I thought it was pretty cool how Gus set up that whole medical tent inside that warehouse.
Yeah, he knew he was going to have emergency assistance after the poison. I think that charcoal was probably like they use in the hospital when you overdose on something, but it won't save you. So he thought of everything.
Yeah. And I remember on my rewatch, I know I've rewatched it a time or two before our podcast, so I've seen this episode a few times. The first time, and maybe one or two of the first rewatches, Kelly, I didn't remember that this was a different building than the meth factory. I always kind of thought those were the same place.
Oh, no, He's got a whole separate setup where they wouldn't even save Mike. It was all about Gus. Get him in there, get him top, you know, they're paying our salary. So that was a whole separate setup he had.
Right. Plus it wouldn't make sense to go from killing all the cartel chiefs and then going right to their meth factory. They're all on the same team.
Right.
So I felt kind of silly about that, but they go to this old warehouse, and inside is a pristine medical tent that Gus's doctor has set up with every possible medical contingency ready and pre-prepared for things that might happen. And you're right. They pick Gus over Mike because Gus is the one that writes the checks. Although I still wonder how Jesse got there. It's still kind of hard for me to figure out. But Jesse comes screaming around the corner, and that's where they are. Because at that point, Gus does look unconscious, and Mike is pretty much out of it.
Yes, exactly. I guess they don't want us to think about that. I don't know.
There's probably not a lot to choose from. It's probably like, follow this road, and, in 8 miles, you'll see this place we need to go to.
Yeah, because there was no pre-plan. Jesse didn't know what was going on until they were rushing out to the car. So it's not like, maybe they had a map in the car. Who knows? I don't know.
No pre-plan for Jesse, but certainly Gus had a pre-plan. He had that thing all set up to, they just drained his blood and recycled his blood with clean blood to get the poison out of him.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't have a pre-plan for Jesse, like, okay, we're going to kill the cartel, and then when we get out to the car, we're going to have a map and a GPS. He had no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
He thought he was going to be at the cartel.
That's how 411 starts, and then they go to credits, and that's the first scene. Later on, we see that Mike gets a transfusion, too. I'm just going to stick with this scene, this storyline about the cartel and escaping through this medical tent. So Mike gets a transfusion later, too, and Jesse sees the fridge with all their blood and the blood types and all the other medical supplies. And that doctor knows all about the three of them and their medical histories in case anything came up as an emergency that he would have to fix. He knew all about them, including Jesse.
Yeah, that leads me to believe that Gus had given him instructions like, I obviously am first, save me first, but save them as well. If, I'm good to go, then go ahead and pay attention to them. Because why else would he have the blood and the extra beds and everything there?
Yeah. I'm sure he told the doctor, here's the plan. I'm going to put poison into my system. I'm going to take this charcoal. You need to get this poison out of me. I'm sure he told him everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because he knew it was not a really clean operation. He had to get saved a little bit after that poison.
Right.
Gus and Jesse get healthy before Mike does, and they're going to have to leave Mike behind. It's going to take them a week to rest up, I guess. But they're going to walk the 6 miles back to Texas across the border. Now, Kelly, this kind of violated the all three of us get out or none of us rule that they had kind of established.
Well, obviously, Mike wasn't fit to travel. Otherwise, I think he would have. But, Jesse, as much as he loves Mike, I think he wanted to get the hell out of there pronto. I mean, they just killed the cartel. hopefully you get better, Mike. But I think Jesse wanted to get going.
Yeah, and I guess essentially they saved Mike. He wasn't being left in danger. He was in a pretty remote camouflage spot. He probably would have been okay. Mm-hmm. And of course, we know later on he does get back. So, and Jesse along the way of this walk kind of reminds Gus that he won't work alone. He won't work without Walt. He's still protecting him.
Right. It goes right into, I think you could run the lab alone. And he's like, well, you know, I've already told you this at dinner. You know, I'm not going anywhere without Walt.
So to kind of finish up with what Gus and Jesse do, they visit Hector in the retirement home. Hector's in there watching The Bridge Over the River Kwai. I don't know why Gillian picked that movie, but it's a pretty classic old war movie. And this is where Gus shows Tio the Evil Eye medallion. And kind of gives it to him. He lets him keep it, right? Puts it in his pocket.
Yeah, almost. I guess they probably took it like kind of like proof. Like, look, we actually killed him. We wouldn't have his necklace without it. Just kind of hurts him even that much more because he hates Tio.
Yeah.
He just can't wait to exact revenge on him.
Well, he really rubs it in. He says, all of the Dons are dead. Your grandson, Joaquin, is dead. And the last of the Salamanca name died with him. And Hector still won't look at him, though.
Yeah, and it's weird that Gus kind of pointed the finger at Jesse. He had no idea what he was walking into. And he says, you know, he killed your grandson, that guy right over there.
Yeah, you meet the boy, meet the man who killed your grandson. You remember him, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's creepy. At least Gus was more quiet with his chair this time. He kind of picked it up and moved it.
Yeah, right.
So another one of our storylines in Crawl Space was Ted's money deal with the IRS. Now, Ted is telling Skylar he's not going to do it her way. And he tries to give her the money back that she gave him with the check. And he's giving her back a little bit less than she gave him, which was somewhat funny. She gave him $621,000 through the aunt donation, but he's only going to give her back $617,000.
Well, he's got that Mercedes to pay for.
Yep, and he says it's just wrong to use illicit gambling money winnings for this IRS deal. And Skylar says, dude, you're full of shit. I cooked your books. That was wrong, too. But it really looks like all of this is a subtle ploy by Ted to get more money out of Skylar. Do you think he was blackmailing her?
It's funny. There was just a thread on one of my Facebook pages about that today. I don't think that... because he did have a good argument, even though he's really irritating, that, you know, it's not going to change much in my situation if you give me this money back. And then she said, well, what do you mean? You want me to give you more money? And he's like, no, don't twist my words. So
yeah.
It's not like she's a millionaire and he can milk her. I mean, who knows where even she got that much money to give him.
Yeah, I know. But Ted's right. He does need more money to keep his business alive. He's going to lose his house. He's going to, you know, he's going to have to pull his daughter out of school. And she did come up with $600,000 with like the snap of a finger. And I would think if I was Ted, I would think, well, she came up with $600,000. Maybe she can come up with $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was blackmail. I know they probably left it open for interpretation, but I kind of choose to think that it was blackmail.
Yeah.
But, Skylar is going to ask Saul for help in this, and this is where we meet his A-team. And Huel and QB, two great characters that were introduced to the show at this point. We've seen Huel before, but Huel and QB together, and we've seen QB before, but them together are just golden.
Yeah, that was good. You know, you've got Bob the comedian, and those two are comedians, and... Yeah, it's funny to see those two, and are you happy, Huel? Reasonably... That whole thing was great.
I'll tell you what this is about, Mr. Beneke. This is about you and me doing our best to keep Huel happy.
Huel? Who's Huel?
This is Huel. Huel, you happy?
Reasonably.
What would make you unhappy?
This little motherfucker not doing what he's told.
And if you would have become unhappy, Mr. Beneke wouldn't care for that?
I'm gonna say no.
Well, there you have it.
So Huel and QB make him write the check out, and... Kelly, I thought Bill Burr is a pretty damn good criminal. He's very matter of fact. He looks kind of like a criminal in his leather jacket there. But Huel's happy. They get him to write the check. But it turns out Ted's neck isn't very happy.
Yeah, when he runs and hits the, what does he hit, the coffee table?
Hits like the cabinet and the oranges fall down. Do you think we're going to see Ted again in Better Call Saul?
It's possible because of there was some speculation with some of his phone book ads. Like, there's Beneke in it, so possibly. But the oranges falling is also symbolic to when Carol, in one of the last episodes, when the oranges fall out of her bag to, it's either Godfather.
Yeah.
With the oranges falling. That was on purpose, but.
Yeah, and Godfather 2, the Godfather is shopping for oranges in the street, or looking at fruit and vegetables in the streets of New York, and as soon as he picks out the oranges and he has a bag of oranges, the guys come up and try to assassinate him and shoot him.
Yeah.
You know, Gilligan was probably a huge fan of Godfather.
Absolutely.
And so the very last thing here we see about Huel and QB and the A-Team and Saul and all this is that they report that it was an act of God, this whole neck, Ted's neck thing.
Right. Like, how are we going to get Skyler to believe that this wasn't by force, that he actually slammed into something when he slipped on the rug?
It sure messes things up, though. Like, what an unfortunate mess up for this plan that looked like it was going perfectly.
Right. Well, they did get the check, didn't they?
Yeah, they got the check, but now the guy that's potentially under suspicion of the IRS has a broken neck. You know, it's just not good. It's messy.
Yeah.
So another thread in this story was Walt and Hank. Hank has Walt driving him around so they can spy on Gus's warehouse, and they're looking at this warehouse from a distance, and Hank tries to tell him about the art of surveillance and, like, watching places, I guess, which is pretty funny because I remember the time Hank was watching that RV and he got caught snooping on those people in the RV.
Yeah, didn't he say it's not all speedboats and supermodels?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
So during this time of surveillance, though, they have a lot of downtime. Hank tells Walt about the big happenings down in Mexico, and that's meaning this big poisoning scene that we saw. And he starts to ask Hank. Hank starts to ask Walt about his beat up face and invites him to talk about it. And Walt says, "I'm done explaining myself." As Heisenberg kind of leaks out there.
Right, exactly. He's done. I mean, he's got his son asking him questions. He's got his wife asking him questions. He's being followed. He's just like, I'm over it. Everyone just needs to get off me.
So they have a little bit of a scene later on where Walt picks up Hank and Tyrus is still watching them. Tyrus is somewhere down the street on Hank's block. Even though Walt has, like, called the cops on him one time before, Tyrus is back. He's still surveilling Hank. But they go together on another run, and they go to the laundry, or they're about to go to the laundry. And Hank tells Walt that Madrigal owns the laundromat, Madrigal Electromotive. And that was in Gail's notebook, the company that made the air cleaning equipment. So they own the laundry. They also own Pollos Hermanos.
Yeah, you can see he's closing in. And here now they're heading towards the laundromat. Now what does he do? You know?
Poor Hank, man. He's getting beat up by all these crashes and stuff. But what do you think Walt was doing there, Kelly? He turns the car right in the path of an oncoming truck, right where Hank is sitting. Do you think he knew Hank would get hurt by that?
I don't know if he had time to look into all that. He was panicking. I mean, the laundry knows his car. And he can't pull up, obviously, with his DEA brother. So he just kind of crashed into a car to, you know, obviously change their course that day. But I don't know if he meant to get him hurt because he's been protective over Hank from the beginning.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, the results of all this, later on, they're back at the White House. Or not the White House. What's Hank's name? Schrader House. Mm-hmm. Eating, looks like, ice cream or yogurt or something. And they all seem pretty happy, even though they've been in this car crash. Hank calls Walt Mr. Magoo, which is kind of funny. And then he tells everybody he's going to order a Gimp Mobile.
Right, which, you know, it's funny because Walt keeps trying to keep Hank off the trail, but Hank just keeps coming. Like, no more Hardy Boys routine, according to Marie. And, oh, I'm just going to get this car that I'll get to drive around in. So he's just constantly on his trail.
Yeah, he wants to be more free. He's being gracious. He's trying to sound gracious, like, Walt, I don't want to put you out anymore. But he knows he's better off on his own. He's free to go and come and go as he pleases, if he can get himself around, too.
Right.
So he orders this special car that he can drive. So let's talk a little bit, Kelly, about Walt and Tyrus. They're working together alone in the lab now, and Walt tries to pull a trick on Tyrus. He weighs the production a little bit heavier. He calls it a little bit more than it really is. Like it's supposed to be 203 pounds, and Tyrus reweighs it. It's only 201 pounds. And I think it's because if he records it as a higher weight and then it shows up later as less, that Walt could blame Tyrus for trying to steal some of it.
That's a good theory. Yeah, I don't know.
He's trying to get Tyrus in trouble, I think. He's worried. He's trying to do something to mess up the operation because he's still worried about Hank catching on to them. And, you know, that would be bad. That's the whole Hank catches Gus, Hank catches us.
Right.
So now Walt, I guess they can't go to the laundry anymore. Walt's wheeled into the laundry through the dirty laundry cart, which is kind of funny. He asks if it has to be dirty laundry, and Tyrus says yes.
No, he said no.
Oh, he says no? Whatever he said, it was funny.
Yeah, no, you're right. Does the laundry always have to be dirty? And he said no.
And so Walt finds out that while he was away, somebody had cooked. And I guess we find out that it was Jesse. So Walt's going to beg Jesse next not to cook without him because it's essentially Walt's death sentence. If they can make it happen without me, I'm not going to be around much longer. But Jesse thinks that Walt betrayed everybody by bringing Hank to the lab.
Yeah. Well, how does he know that he brought Hank to the lab?
He knows somehow because he accuses Hank of doing he accuses Walt of doing it. I guess Tyrus is probably watching everything those guys do.
I thought that was later when Steve Gomez comes and then Gus calls and says, "See what your partner brought on you."
Well, that happens too, but they also, Jesse also says directly to Walt, "Why would you bring your brother-in-law to the lab?"
Huh. Oh, okay, yeah. Maybe because Tyrus told him?
Yeah, I think Tyrus was watching it from it. You know, that's all Tyrus does is spy on people.
Right.
Tyrus isn't going to cook by himself in the lab, so if he's, you know, he's not going to be by himself, he's probably watching Walt. I don't know, I think it came from Tyrus. So now Tyrus zaps Walt with a taser after this meeting. I guess Walt and Jesse was at Jesse's house.
Yeah, Andrea. Yeah, they were playing games, and he shows up, and Tyrus is there to say, you know, you don't be coming around.
This is a really low moment for Walt because he's appealed to Jesse. Jesse's thrown him out, said, "Screw it, I'm not helping you." And then Tyrus zaps him, and now he's grabbed by Tyrus, with the hood thrown over his head. And they go out and they meet with Gus, and Gus fires him, says, "You know, you're done." And Walt says, "If you could kill me, you'd already do it. I'd already be dead." And Gus gives him that infamous line about, "I'll kill your wife and your infant daughter and your son," and pretty brutal stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, he had said before, you know, I don't believe fear to be an effective motivator a couple seasons back, and or episodes back, and now he's got him out in the desert.
Yeah, I guess the thing he's warning him about now is that he's going to kill Hank. Gus has decided he's going to kill Hank. It's a done deal. You can't do anything about it, Walt. But if you do, if you try to, or if you warn him, if you interfere, I'll kill your wife, your son, your daughter. So Walt is really trapped and really feels kind of like he's out of options at this point. Right. I thought it was interesting, Kelly, that he warned Walt about his plan with Hank. Like, why didn't he just kill Hank? He kind of warns Walt.
Maybe because Walt would try to warn Hank. I don't know.
Right, but why not just kill Hank? Why didn't Gus just kill Hank? I guess it adds to the story because it makes Walt more afraid. Because Walt's really frantic at this point. He goes to Saul and gets the phone number of the disappearer dude, which was a little bit of a horror comedy in itself. It's the vacuum cleaner number, and he has to ask for a certain model number.
Yeah, actually, the idea... It's funny, I don't know what's going on in airplanes and sky malls, but the writer of this, George Masterson, thought of this idea when he was reading an article on a news... on an airplane about a disappearer, because these people, they'll start off trying to find people as a career, and then they turn around and they start trying to disappear the people. So it's actually a real career.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is going to cost Walt a bunch of money. It's $125 per person, and then Saul says something about you need the deluxe acceleration mode for this because you're doing it fast. And Walt talks Saul into giving him a one-hour head start, and then warning Hank. He doesn't want Hank to die because of this. And Saul struggles with that a little bit. He's like, I can't warn him. And Walt says, well, I certainly can't. We're family. Everybody knows my voice. So probably through Francesca or somehow, Saul does agree to warn Hank.
Yeah, Francesca.
And so this sets off a whole frantic set of events here. Walt's really in scramble mode. He goes down and looks in the crawl space for his money, and he finds that it's not all there. Skylar comes in, and she's looking all scared and worried, and she looks down at Walt, and he's looking up at her and asking where the money is. And she tells Walt, of all places, she gave it to Ted to protect the family. What a feeling Walt must have had. He's so desperate already to start with. Then he finds out all his money's gone, and it's gone because his wife gave it to the guy that she cheated on him with.
Right. How do you explain that?
Well, Walt does about all he can do is he just gets into a hysterical screaming and laughter fit, which was relatively terrifying.
It really was, and they had that twisted kind of music with the phone ringing, and then Marie's on there saying, oh, it happened again. Someone's trying to kill Hank.
Yeah, everything's so urgent. Like, Gus is going to kill Hank. Walt has no money to disappear with. The phone is ringing. That's already in motion. It's just so urgent and desperate, and he's got no resources. She gave away all the resources. I don't know. It was just really strange. Skylar appeared to calm down, though, a bit at the end there. She picks up the phone, and she kind of says, don't worry, we'll take care of it. She calms Marie down, which was a little interesting. Like, she had a little bit of game in her. You know, she was ready to stand up to whatever was going to happen next.
Right. I think she's starting to get a better backbone for all this stuff. I mean, it was constant. Things changing, and, you know, she was never cut out for this in the beginning. Neither was Walt, really.
Right. So the crawl space is picked by a lot of people as one of the most dramatic of all the episodes in Breaking Bad. And it's a pretty intense one. But that's where things end in this one for 4:11. Kelly, things are really picking up. The roller coaster's really accelerating here as we get down to the last couple episodes.
Yeah, but I feel like we're on the top, ready to drop down, and then we're going to go right back up again and go back down.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty exciting stuff. So that's it for our West Coast Project coverage of Breaking Bad Season 4, Episode 11, Crawl Space. My name is Mike, and my Twitter handle is @scathingtweets. Kelly, what is your Twitter handle?
BRBA_funfacts.
And your websites?
Is Breaking Bad Fun Facts and Better Call Saul Fun Facts on Instagram and Breaking Bad Fun Facts on Facebook.
All right, awesome. So we'll see you next time, Kelly, for number 12, End Times.
End Times. Okay, sounds good.
Okay, talk to you then.